Dan Celian.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celian.
Welcome back. Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. All the indices in negative territory right now as we get into the first after the first half hour of trading. They were positive. The Dow opened up in positive territory. That has turned. I'm not sure what the deal is. I suspect it might have something to do with Boeing, but I haven't seen the Boeing numbers. By the way, it looks like Occidental is going to go along with the Anadarko buyout. They are going to be likely the new buyer. I don't think that Chevron is going to challenge it. And the reason I don't think that is because Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, has just announced that they're going to be buying they're going to be investing $10 billion into Occidental. So that probably means, I don't think he would have made that announcement unless they were reasonably sure that Chevron wasn't going to place a challenge bid on that. So, pretty interesting. Both of those companies really makes it interesting for us at Financial Issues because both of those companies have been on our buy list many, many times over the years. So I suspect that there are thousands of partners that own one of those companies. And in the long run, you're going to make out pretty good. Both of them are in negative territory right now. As a matter of fact, Occidental is down over 3% as we speak. So they're getting beat up a little bit right now, primarily because they're laying out an awful lot of their cash flow. So that is going to be a little bit of a problem for them. In the short term, the key is the short term. We're long-term investors. We shouldn't be concerned about it. Okay. Also, we were due to get out some numbers. We did get Chicago PMI out. That was negative. Or not negative. It wasn't negative. It's still positive. 52 and some change. So it is still in expansion mode, but it's down from where it was the month before. So that number did come out. Consumer sentiment, I don't know where that came in. I'm looking for that right now, but I'll see if I can find that. But consumer sentiment number was also due out. Let me just see. Yeah, it is the consumer sentiment. Boy, I don't see that. That's odd. Maybe I'm wrong. You have it, Ian?
I do, yes. Consumer sentiment came out. I'm sorry. That's consumer confidence index. Is that the same one you were looking for?
Yeah, that's okay. What's that?
Yeah, we have it at 129.2 currently.
Oh, my word. Okay. Well, okay, great. Thanks, Ian. Yeah, 129.2. Is that what you said? Wow. So I wasn't expecting that, man. It's sitting at 124. And you remember me saying yesterday, man, it doesn't get much better than that. Well, guess what? It just did. Now we're getting, we're approaching all-time record highs in consumer sentiment. I'll tell you, this economy just doesn't see, it is just, it's amazing. So right now you've got a whole lot. Remember I said this the other day when we got some numbers out on Friday, the consumer spending numbers. Consumer spending came in on Friday, the best number since 2009. So I said all the presidential candidates on the Democratic side all grabbed their heart at the same time when the number was released. Well, guess what? They did the same thing again. Consumer confidence coming out at 129. By the way, for the 8 years during the Obama or the Biden administration, never saw a consumer confidence number over 100. So never saw anything like this. And, you know, we continue to see it getting better. wait a minute, we got trade issues with China, trade issues with the Eurozone, Eurozone on the verge of a recession. We've got no trade deal solidified with Japan, North American trade agreement, nothing. Yeah, they signed a deal, but it's not been solidified. Now we've got Congress pushing back on it. We got Trudeau pushing back on it. We've got major crisis at the border, major crisis at the border, state of emergency at the border. Okay, I'm just pointing out some things here. And we got consumer confidence at near record territory. I mean, it is just unbelievable. We had the best consumer spending in 1 month since 2009. And that was because 2008, there wasn't any spending. 2009, the majority of the spending that was going on was going to satisfy debt. And that's the last time we had a number as high as we had on Friday. It's crazy. Anyway, we've got the ag report coming out, and there's been a lot of talk this morning in the markets in reference to commodities, particularly in the Eurozone. So commodities really starting to come into focus. And here's Craig Haugert, our ag reporter, coming up with the commodities. So we'll go to Craig as soon as he gets back. Craig, as soon as we get back, we'll be...
This is Craig Haugert with your Financial Issues Ag Update. The corn market was higher Monday as the recent rain events and forecasts for more cool, wet weather across the upper Midwest this week was seen as supportive. Weekly export inspections were also better than anticipated at 53.8 million bushels. After the close, the weekly crop progress report showed the corn crop is 15% planted, which is exactly where we were a year ago, where we lagged the five-year average of 27% planted by this date. So worth noting that 3% of the crop has emerged. As I record this, the overnight spot corn futures are trading up a half a cent. Soybean prices were lower yesterday, pressured by the idea that there could be a significant switch from corn to beans should the rains across much of the upper Midwest continue for the next couple of weeks. Weekly export inspections came in at 18.1 million bushels, which is at the top end of expectations, but lags the 39.8 million that we need to average to hit the USDA's annual export projection. After the close, the crop planting progress showed the bean crop as 3% planted, with the five-year average being 6% planted on this date. In the overnight trade, spot soybean futures are trading a penny higher. The wheat market had another rough day as it slumped unfavorable weather conditions in U.S. winter wheat areas, as well as Russian and European Union wheat growing regions. Global supplies remain plentiful, and the winter wheat crop conditions were expected to prove, all of which is keeping pressure on the market. Weekly export inspections came in at 23.2 million bushels as we continue to fall further behind the pace needed to hit the USDA's annual projection. After the close, the crop conditions and planting reports were out, pegging the winter wheat crop at 64% good to excellent. Now that's up 2% from last week and well ahead of the 33% in this category a year ago. Spring wheat was seen as 13% planted, which was actually ahead of last year's pace, but well behind the five-year average of 33% planted. In the overnight trade, Chicago is 3 cents lower, while Kansas City is unchanged, and Minneapolis is a penny higher. Cotton turned in a disappointing session as July futures finished 75 points lower at 76.95. 12% of the cotton crop is reported as planted, which is only a couple of points behind the five-year average. In the overnight trade, spot futures are trading 27 points higher. We had a lot of red ink in the livestock futures yesterday. June live cattle were 25 cents lower for the session, while August feeder cattle finished today down $1.77.5. June lean hogs continued their recent losses, finishing the session down 70 cents. When I spoke about the gap in the June hog charts yesterday, I failed to notice that it also gapped higher, and that gap wasn't filled. With the gap lower last week, we now have an island reversal formation on the chart, and that tends not to be good news for the market. Class 3 milk futures had a good run recently, but yesterday they lost a bit of ground, with the June futures closing 2 points lower as they settled at 16.37. In the overnight trade, spot futures are trading down a point. In the cash markets, choice beef boxes were 15 cents higher at 233.14, while selects were $1.69 lower as they settled at 217.72.
The opening statement in the Constitution of the United States says this, that we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. I don't know what part of that we don't get anymore. That was written by men who cared about this country deeply.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia.
Welcome back, 844-707. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. Well, we've got a town hall meeting tonight. We're going to be, I hope that you'll have an opportunity to join us. I know there's a lot of you that listen in the evening to the program here out in Montana. That's where we are. And we are going to be here tonight doing a town hall meeting and then continuing to be here the rest of the week as we teach through some things at Glacier Bible College. So we're very excited to be here, and we sure hope that you will have an opportunity to come by East Haven Baptist Church in Kalispell, Montana. East Haven Baptist Church in Kalispell. And we're going to be here doing a town hall meeting tonight. So we look forward to that. We're going to have a great time. Boy, I got a lot of things to talk about. Just as this day goes on, it seems to be lots of news breaking, lots of things happening from an economic perspective. Primarily, of course, there's other news as well. So we'll watch that. As I mentioned, we continue to see the gasoline prices continue to drop. That's very good as we watch that continue. It's not dropping a whole lot, but nonetheless, it's not going up, and that's good news. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens tomorrow when we get EIA numbers and what inventories are looking like. What I'm anxious about is seeing what the end of the month exports are going to look like. I haven't seen the export numbers, any of the export numbers of crude oil yet for this month. So it'll be interesting next week to get a look at that and see where we are and then try to compare that to some of the inventory numbers that we have. But it's critically important, although when you look at the numbers, things like consumer confidence coming in at 129.2, which is insane. It's such a good number. It's so high. It's just amazing that consumers continue to have this overwhelming abundance of confidence. And it's really a vote on the confidence of the president and his agenda, and very extremely confident that his agenda is going to continue to get carried forth. And that is very good news. We see consumer spending was up to a 2009 high, up 9/10, or I think it was 7/10, 8/10 of 1%. So pretty good move up. Again, we see gasoline prices continuing to drop a little bit, and that's very good news. So inventory numbers are going to be very important as we take a look at that. It looks like that Libya managed to fight off some of the attacks that they had last night, trying to shut down one of their biggest oil-producing areas with raids and bombs, and they managed to put that off. That has been somewhat of a problem. Libya doesn't put a lot of oil into the markets, but what they put in the market is a very light, sweet crude oil. So it's a very desirable oil, but nonetheless, it's not a huge amount, but it is disruptive of the oil supply in the Brent crude oil markets. And remember, oil is very much a global market and does hurt all of us when that happens. But I believe that we have the possibility and the probability to increase productivity. How about Oshkosh, the defense contractor? Some of you have owned that company for a very long time. And I can remember when I used to get calls all the time, because it is a company that has been on my buy list many, many times over the years. And boy, some of you own that. I just got it. I got an email from somebody that said they were up 400% in Oshkosh. What do you think you're going to do? And I told him to hold it. You might as well keep it. You've had it this long, and so many people got tired of it going down, and they sold off on it. They're very sorry today, if they're looking at the numbers, that they did that. But it is amazing. Had a very good earnings report. So it continues to climb as earnings reports came in very strong. I remember very distinctly talking about that stock because at the time it was on my buy list during the presidential campaign, last presidential campaign. And I said, look, make no mistake about it. If we see a dramatic change in the leadership at the White House, this is going to be very good for this company. Well, it sure has, to say the least. But they had a very good earnings report come out this morning. So that is good news. Some are concerned about the Treasury yield. Treasury yield struggling to find some direction, even in the midst of GDP data being very, very strong. It would stand to reason that yields on the 10-year, the 2-year, would be dropping. Why? Because there's got to be an enormous amount of money flowing in to treasuries. You've got nothing happening. You've got Germany looking at negative interest rates on their bonds, negative interest rates by 0.02. So not a whole lot negative, but nonetheless, it's going to actually cost you money to put your money or have your money in those bonds. So I'm sure there is an exodus around the globe of yield of bonds, and it's flowing into the only bond that they can feel like they can trust, and that is U.S. bond market. That drives the yield down, as you can imagine. So we're seeing that happen. That happened yesterday, continuing today. So we'll see if that will, in fact, continue to flow, but it doesn't seem like it's having any impact on the markets, or it shouldn't be if it is. All right, we're going to go to phones, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Steve. Steve's calling us from Georgia. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dan. I had a question about TSP.
Okay.
Doing pretty good last year. Got scared off in October, so I pulled everything out and put it in G, so I'm ready to get back in. What would percentages would you suggest and what fund?
Are you still contributing?
Yes.
And are you going to be for a while, Steve?
Yes, I've always done the max ever since I started.
Okay. Yeah, I whatever you do, don't – I would say, yeah, change your allocations, but don't leave again like that because you missed out on the sale. So you could have been buying in when shares were cheaper, and you missed the sale, so you could have accumulated more shares, which would have really helped you during the run-up. And I say this not to you only, but I say it to everybody listening. It's critically important when you are in a 401k, TSP, whatever it might be, where you're contributing on a regular basis, don't ever, ever, ever stop or get out or change your allocation during a downturn. It's one of the biggest mistakes people make, and I don't want you to make that mistake, because now your dollar is buying a larger percentage of those shares, and that is a very good thing. So you need to be celebrating. If you've got another 10 years to work or more, you need to be celebrating when the market goes down and trying to increase the amount of money you put in to those, not decrease it. So having said that, let me just say I would move some of that out of the G fund. I would look at, are you going to be working how many more years?
15.
Yeah, so I would say that you'd want to put about 40% in the C fund, C as in Charlie, and about 25% in the S as in Sam, and then leave the rest in the G fund. But you should change your allocations. As a matter of fact, I would be okay with 15% in the S fund, and 10% at this point in the I fund. And then I would just forget about it and continue to make your contributions the same way.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dan.
All right, Steve. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Chris. Chris calling us from West Virginia. Hey, Chris.
I'm calling from Washington.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, I'm close. I got the W anyway.
There you go. God bless you for all you do. My mom has 7 great-grandkids she wants to give $500 each to, and she wants a uniform gift to minors account. And she's wondering what you would recommend. It's a one-time gift because she's not overly wealthy. And so what would you suggest as far as for $500 each for kids that range from 1 to 15, the oldest is, but most of them are quite a bit younger?
Now, are the UGMA accounts, the Unified Gift of Minor Act, the custodial accounts, are they already established?
She has established them but not funded any of them yet. We can undo them if we need to. I mean, we don't have to, you know, we haven't funded any yet.
Sure. So do you know whether the children have any accounts that maybe their parents might have set up for them?
I don't know that for certain, but I don't think they probably have.
So I'm okay with that, but I just want to point out a couple things to you to share with her. So the UGMA accounts are fine. Now, what it means is that she sets those accounts up, she puts money into it, any capital gains or interest that those accounts earn, she has to pay tax on them, on that, when she files her taxes. And then when the child turns 15, it becomes taxable at their tax rate. That is what is considered to be the tax benefit, one of the tax benefits of doing that. So I would say, and I'm coming up on a break here, Chris. I'm sorry, I got to put you on hold and come right back to you. But I'm going to put you on hold, come back to you. Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. If you got a question on Facebook, you want to post that question. We'll get to those as well. Let me go back to Chris. I was talking to Chris from Washington State who had a question about what is called UGMA accounts or Unified Gift to Minor Acts. A Unified Gift to Minors Act allows a person, just one person, you can't have several names on it, one person to be a custodian for a minor child. And you can open this Unified Gift of Minors Act by putting your name and the child's name with the child's Social Security and your Social Security. Now, the way that works is, and the reason why some say it's a tax benefit is, because you would, yes, pay any taxes that are incurred in the account. So let's say you have a CD, and the CD earns 2% every year, and they will send you a 1099 at the end of the year, and you will be required to pay tax on that 2% that it's earned. Now, when the child turns 15, then the child's tax rate kicks in, and the child pays any of those taxes. Now, the theory being that the child is going to have a lower tax rate than you would have. So you no longer have to pay the tax. The child files it. once they're 15. They also have an opportunity to do whatever they want with that money. It becomes their ownership, and you are no longer considered the custodian of that account. In other words, you don't have any say in what happens to that money, and that may be an okay thing. So I don't believe that the way the tax law is today, and these were set up many, many, many years ago, but the way the tax law is today, I don't know for a lot of people to set these accounts up unless these people are in the very, very highest two tax brackets. I don't know that the benefit is what it used to be. The other downside that I wanted to tell Chris, Chris left. She's not there, I see. Okay, but anyway, oh, she is. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see your name there on the board anymore. I thought maybe you hung up. So the other thing I wanted to tell you, Chris, is that it could be actually hurt a child that may have an opportunity because, you know, depending upon the income of their parents, they may qualify for certain advantages in tuition and such in higher education after high school, whatever that might be, maybe even a grant of some sort or a scholarship. And based on that is going to be somewhat income-based. Well, if a child has any money, I don't care if it's $10, in their name, it oftentimes can disqualify them from that, or at least dramatically impact their name on the priority list of getting some of that. So that might not apply to these children because their parents may be in a situation where it's going to be somewhat irrelevant because of how much money their family income is. But I throw that out there too. So they're going to have ownership of it. So at 15 or at 16, if they want to buy a car with it, they can do it. And I, you know, that might be okay with your mother, which is fine. But I just throw that out there. And this whole tax situation, that I throw it out there. So sometimes it may be more advantageous for your mother to have an account that is separate from any other accounts that she has, with all of the money, the 500 times 7, all of that money in one account. Now, she can list all of them as a beneficiary of the account in case something were to happen, then they would each get their share. Or she can just leave it sit there as long as she wants. She doesn't have to have, she can have a little note to their parents that, hey, they can have this money at a certain age or whatever. Or she can leave it accumulate. And, of course, whatever it accumulates, it's compounding now on a bigger number, and that's a good thing. And then she can just divide it by seven at the time that somebody needs some of the money. Divide it by seven and give that person their share of that money, and she can do that anytime she wants, and it wouldn't show up anywhere, and she's still going to have to pay the capital gains tax on it anyway, or the interest income on it, and so there's really not any benefit to the UGMA account, but it'll give her more flexibility with the money, and it'll give the children some flexibility in the sense that they're not going to have to really declare that or have that show up anywhere.
Okay, I will let her know that. That's good. And I have another question.
Okay.
My portfolio, at some point, I bought, I'm a little overweighted in materials, and I'm way overweighted in the gift annuity. But the materials I have in A40, I'm down about $1,300 in that. And it's not really in the income portfolio. I'm 65, and I am spending my retirement accounts. I have 272K in a Roth, and then I have 100 and something in a self-directed IRA, 130K in that. And so I'm paying a lot more tax than I used to because I'm in that 80-something percent, you know, whatever that break-off is. So every time I take out more to pay the taxes, I pay more tax, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I have this, I have a couple questions. One is if I should try to go ahead and just cough up the tax and transfer a lot to the Roth or leave it, or, and the other question is the this MA40, which isn't really an income on the income portfolio, if I should sell it, just go ahead and sell it so that when the to be decided, when you, that comes out, I can buy more of that. And then I also have a healthcare stock that is done really well for me that I've just purchased a little while ago, and I only have about 70 shares of it, but still it's been real good. It's I don't even know what number it, it's HC47, and I like that one. I don't really want to sell it even though it's not an income portfolio, but I will if you think it's best. I do.
Well, I think it's important that that you aren't, when you say you're living off of the money, does that mean
Social
you're
Security.
Dipping into principal?
On the Roth, I take out less, so no, but I am dipping into principal in the other one, in the self-directed.
And so if, do you think it would be, would it be feasible that if you were receiving, you know, 5% on the overall portfolio every year, that would be enough to supplement your income? And I'm talking about all your money combined. Or would that still cause you would still need to be dipping into principal a little bit?
Well,
do you know
I
that
am
answer? You might not even.
I don't really know that answer. I know my mom likes to travel. She's almost 85. And so a bunch of it goes towards the travel. That's why I dip into so much. Uh-huh. We travel about 3 times a year, and then I have to pay for dog care and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to be dipping into anyway, regardless, because I have Social Security and my military retirement. So I'm not destitute, and I'm on Medicare now, just starting, because I'm just turning 65 tomorrow. So, and I've been retired already for a while. So I just, you know, I'm trying to save my Roth so I don't take as much out of that.
Yeah. And that's wise. Do that. I would be okay with you transferring a little bit over to your Roth, but I don't think it would be advantageous to you at this point. I would be, I guess what I'm concerned about, I just don't want you to outlive your money if you need it. But now that you tell me about the military pension and know that, you know, I'm not concerned that you would be destitute if something happened. But I would definitely want you to sell that stock. I would sell the healthcare stock as well. Take your profits on that. Is that in your Roth or is that in your traditional?
Trying to do now is buy from the Roth more, buy the stuff that's going to grow and going to, you know.
Yeah. So the stock you're selling, is that in your Roth or is that in your traditional?
Ooh, I think that the MA40 is in my traditional, and the healthcare one is in my Roth.
Okay. So I would like you to sell your healthcare stock and take that profit. It's a great thing to do because you won't have to pay any tax on it, and you ought to do that. I would sell the other one too, the material stock. I think you need to sell it. I really want you to try to get focused on the income side of things. If it's not paying, you know, at least a 3% dividend, I don't think you should own it at this point. I think that...
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. Listen, I want to remind all of you two things, and unfortunately, they both involve giving. but it's okay. One of them is preborn, and we are trying to get, I don't know what the new number is, I haven't seen it yet, but we're trying to get to that 2,500 mark that we are sponsoring, you know, the actual ultrasound test at pregnancy centers. And we've had an unbelievable campaign. Our original goal by Mother's Day was 1,000, but we did it in 2 days because you guys are so incredible. For every 100 we got, somebody took some, a donor took somebody off the waiting list that was waiting, a pregnancy center. There were 10 of them on the waiting list. Because of you, they're all off the waiting list and have brand new ultrasound machines. Now we are trying to send them each enough money that would help offset the cost for 150 scans that they might do. And we want all 10 of them to get a little bit of a jump start with their new ultrasound machine and help them out. And we're asking you to do that and save the life of a baby. It's $28. So you can go to our website and click on that baby bottle. It'll also show you where we are, how close we are. We're going to continue it through Mother's Day, but we sure hope that you will be a part of that. The other thing I was going to mention to you, I don't think there is, there probably has been, but this is a critical time to become a partner with the ministry because we have so much going on from an economic perspective and guidance that we want to give you. And we want you to be a partner. We want to be able to help as many people as we can. And we are asking you, because without your partnership, we don't exist. And we exist because God has raised us up, I believe, raised this ministry up, that we might be able to help you. But God has also raised up every year faithfully his people to help. And we're probably having, we probably had the slowest first quarter that we've had in maybe 10 years. In the minute. Now I'm going to say, I think our slowest one before this was 2009 or 2010 maybe. So maybe 7 years, 8 years that we've had. And we sure would like to see, would appreciate your help. We really would appreciate your help if you can find your way to do that. All right, 844-707-5533, folks. If you want to queue your call up, we have lines open, and we've got another hour and 10 minutes left. Another hour and 10 minutes left. So we sure would appreciate it if you want to queue your call up. This would be a good time to do it. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Ray. Ray is calling us from Texas. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Dan. Thanks an awful lot for taking all of our calls. You're really a blessing to all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey. You're welcome.
Hey, I am a new member, and I'm looking forward to transferring my funds over. I have a modest IRA of about $70,000 into a self-directed investments where I can have a biblically responsible portfolio. But I don't want to touch that during retirement. I am 68 years old. I intend to retire or be ready to retire at 70 when I'll start taking Social Security. I'm building my dream house right now for retirement. And what I'm looking at is really, am I set up okay for retirement in terms of my other income and how inflation might impact that. I have, probably will have about a $5,000 budget. About a third of that comes from a pension that is fixed, so there's no cost of living adjustment with that. But that's about the same amount of what my P&I will be on my mortgage, which of course will not change as well. About two-thirds of my income will be from military and from Social Security, which has the cost of living. And so, you know, I don't know that cost of living really keeps up with inflation all the time. The other part of my picture is that we have two rental houses, of which I'm only counting on about $500 a month cash flow. And their value is about, probably between them will be about $500,000. And so I'm wondering if the inflation on the rent will kind of make up whatever my cost of living increases on that two-thirds will not.
Yeah, I can't speak too much to the rents because I don't know. You probably know your area there in which you live better than I do, and the demand for renters. But I would say in general, it probably will not keep up with your long-term the impact of inflation in the long term. It's going to help you a little bit in the short term, but it's not going to help you completely. It's not going to, if you're feeling the effects of inflation to the tune of, say, 4%, none of what you indicate is going to help you, in the long term. It will be good in the short term probably and work out. But if inflation has a steady creep up, then it is going to impact the long term, your long term purchasing power. And so I think everybody's got to be somewhat prepared to that. And the ideal situation would be, and this is what I hope might happen, is that by the time it starts hitting you at age, so you're 70, so the time the inflation really starts having an impact on your purchasing power, chances are you're going to be 80. It's going to be 10 years. And at 80, there are going to be some expenses that will probably slow down a little bit. Things like travel or driving and those kinds of things. So it may offset a little bit. The other side of it is by 80, you're a little bit less reluctant about dipping in to some principal of savings that you might have to help offset it, because you will reach a point of age, as we all will, that the odds of you outliving that money you have set aside and with what little bit you're using to help offset the inflation are pretty slim, and you should be okay. So I don't see there being much of an issue for you from an inflation perspective. I don't know how far you are away from having your homes that are rental properties paid for, but there's always the possibility that you might be in a situation where your rental properties now are nearly paid for. You can turn that over to a property management company, if you haven't already done it, that is taking a 20% fee or something from that each month. So that you don't have to deal with it, because at some point in time in age, you're not going to want to deal with it, and you can still maintain the income from it. So, and by then, rentals will be fairly inflated, because rental prices were going up for well above inflation on a very regular basis in the last 8 years. It has slowed down since, but if we get a downturn in the economy, that is likely to pick back up again. So I think it sounds to me like you're probably going to be okay and not really feel the impacts of inflation, unless we were to have a Jimmy Carter type inflation for an extended period of time.
So the rentals sometimes keep up with inflation, sometimes they're a little ahead, sometimes they're a little behind. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying on a national average, rentals have been well above inflation. They've gone up far more than inflation. Now, I can't speak to your specific area, but on a national average standpoint, they have in the last 7 years have far outpaced inflation. So that tends to happen when we get into inflationary times, that rentals tend to be good things to keep pace with it.
So it sounds like you're saying I'm probably in an okay situation.
Yeah, sounds to me like you are in a good situation. And if I were you, I don't know that I would be very concerned about your purchasing power, you know, inflation impacting your purchasing power in a dramatic way. There's always the chance that there could be a geopolitical event or a political event in you know, at all that could impact inflation. But certainly that could happen. But I don't see that on the horizon.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your input on that.
All right, Ray.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for your call. Yep. Folks, 844-707-5533. We got another hour. We're going to take your calls. If you want to queue it up, now's a good time to do it. 844-707-5533. I also want to remind you that all that you have is his. It's all the Lord's, folks. And we will be standing before him someday. And let's stand before him and be found a good and faithful steward of all that he's given us, our time, our talents, our finances. Have a great day. God bless. If you have to leave, more financial issues right after this.